Hello and welcome to another episode of Corporate Buzz. I'm your host Keertana Tiwari and I'm here with Money Control's Corporate Bureau Chief Prince Thomas for the top news from Corporate India. Hi Prince, welcome to the show.
Hi Keertana, thank you.
Prince, it has been 4 years since N. Chandrasekaran took over as the chairman of Tata Sons. Why have these 4 years been significant with him?
So, you know, the circumstances around which Chandrasekaran joined and became Tata Sons chairman itself was very dynamic because, you know, his predecessor Cyrus Misri was asked to leave by the board and then Chandrasekaran was chosen to succeed him. So the circumstances were not very conducive and, you know, there were a lot of uncertainty around the group because the allegations were traded between Tata Sons and Cyrus Misri.
Right.
So it's not really the ideal condition for someone to take over an important role as like this one. You know, Tata Group is the largest conglomerate in India and this is the topmost executive position.
Right.
So that per se itself makes the job among the most important in India, Inc. And second, Tata's actually are such a huge group, you know, we call them as a salt to steel conglomerate. And they have hands in so many various pies that it's also a group that's grown, but also has had its challenges, legacy challenges and business calls and things like that. Mm-hmm. So one, there were business challenges. And second, you had this such a acrimonious exit of the predecessor. So one must say that through these 4 years, Chandrasekaran or Chandra as he's known, has been able to calm the nerves, you know, that uncertainty is gone. The case is still being played out in the courts, but then it's not affecting the group functioning anymore. So that itself has been a huge plus. And some of the decisions that he's taken to pair off losses, you know, reduce debt in some of the companies. So those have also worked, especially the telecom business. I think he did quite a bit. And then he's taken new calls now. You know, he's identified six new areas like electric vehicles, battery storage, digital, renewables, healthcare. These are the areas that he's identified where the Tata Group would be betting on for the future.
Okay.
So it's a very interesting position right now. And in the last 1 or 2 weeks itself, we've seen so many multiple investments. So you had JLR saying that it's going to be becoming, selling only electric vehicles by, I think, 2025. I could be mistaken by of the date. And then you had all the news coming about Tata's investing in Big Basket, possibly buying it.
Right.
And then you had the whole thing about, you know, Tata Electronics setting up a unit in Tamil Nadu to make mobile components. And Apple could be one of its clients. So all these are announcements and investments that are connected to what Chandra is looking to bet on. So it's a very, very interesting time now. It will be very intriguing to see how it pans out because, even the new areas that he's identified, there are other peers who have already taken a lead.
Can we talk more about the Tata Group's, the story about Tata Group, planning to buy a stake in Big Basket? Mm-hmm. We've seen that over the past few months, we've been seeing how people are moving to online grocery shopping.
That's
as
right.
Well as many other companies have done similar deals. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about this particular deal?
So this is one of the biggest calls that Chandra has taken. I think it could be also one of the biggest challenges too. Because retail, and then if you go at e-commerce, is already a space which has seen a lot of very big players. You know, so you have Walmart, which is present through Flipkart, and then you have Reliance Retail there. And even in the online marketing space, apart from Big Basket, there are other players also who have come in. So it's a very interesting space, and surely then I think the Tatas have taken a call to that they need a presence. They already have a big consumer product presence through Titan and, they have all the other products like the Tetley tea and things like that. So they have a huge footprint already. Mm-hmm. And you can see in the market that Tata is introducing newer products too. And Big Basket, I think, also the larger play to introduce a super app. So we know that Alibaba has a super app, and Reliance has said it wants to develop, it is developing a super app.
Right.
And Tatas have also gotten into the race. So the buy for Big Basket is part of the digital play. It's part of the increasing its offering in the whole digital digital space. So Big Basket will bring in that retail part to it. So it's a very important step. It's not going to be cheap. It's a multi-billion-dollar investment. And it means that it's a call that the Tatas are taking about where they want to put their bets on. So it's a very interesting investment, and investment is just going to be the first step into it. What Chandra makes of this investment will be even more intriguing.
Right. Prince, moving on to the next story, Kane Energy has filed a case in a U.S. district court to enforce a $1.2 billion arbitration award against India. Can you talk about this, and what is India planning to do about this?
Sure. So this case is pretty old. I mean, in the sense, it dates back to, I think, 2005 or 6 or so.
Okay.
Where Kane had kind of restructured its presence in India. And then the government had said that that restructuring had led to capital gains, and thus it needs to pay tax for that. And shortly afterwards, you know, Kane sold its India business to Vedanta. Mm-hmm. And it retained a minority shareholding, I think it was less than 10%. And the government since then has also taken hold of those shares and also blocked the dividend that Kane would have otherwise got from Indian unit of Kane.
Okay.
Now, so Kane has now gone and contested the whole tax liability case that the Indian government had slapped it with. And then the International Court at Hague had awarded the case in favor of Kane.
Mm-hmm.
And now to make sure that India does that, and India pays that $1.2 billion, Kane has approached the U.S. government to enforce the order. And if India fails to do it, then Kane claims that it has rights to seize Indian properties overseas. And this could even include aircraft of Air India, which is the national airline.
Okay.
But the thing is, the news that has come out latest is that the Indian government plans to contest the, you know, the court ruling, and it has time till March to formally put in that contest. But at the same time, we see that the Kane CEO has been in India for 2 days now. He's been meeting the finance ministry officials. So there's probably also a move to come to an off-the-court settlement.
Mm-hmm.
And that could probably be the sanest thing to do. I don't think neither of the sides would want this to get stretched out on the in the courts.
Right.
And I think what government would ideally like is that, you know, it has set up a new kind of a platform to solve tax issues.
Mm-hmm.
And probably it would ask Kane India to, you know, use that tax platform to, you know, resolve this one too.
Okay.
But we have to see if that happens or not. And what is the final call that both the sides are taking. But this case will have, is also interesting because we have been talking about ease of doing business in India, mm-hmm. and how the FTI, about the need to increase it, need to make India a production hub, a manufacturing hub of the world. So we need FTI, and a lot of investors, companies will be looking at how this case progresses. So there's quite a few aspects of the case. So in the next few days and few weeks will be pretty crucial.
Okay. Coming to the Jet Airways story, the plan, I mean, we have heard so far that the plan was to get Jet back on the runway by the summer of this year, but it looks like it will get extended again. What exactly is happening there?
So that's right. The original plan after the Jalan Calra Capital Consortium, which won the bid last year.
Yeah.
I think it was sometime in September, October or something around that.
Uh-huh.
And it was hoping that by the summer means summer season, the summer vacation time is another peak time for Indian aviation.
Yeah.
Because people travel during the summer vacations when the schools close. And to do that, they also need to be part where the summer schedule is announced by the Indian government. So the DGCA, which is the industry regulator, comes out with a summer schedule and a winter schedule. So unless the airline starts operating, it won't be part of the summer schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So it was hoping that it would have started operating by now, and it would have been part of the summer schedule, and probably by around April, it would have started flying. So that was the original plan. But to get the keys to Jet Airways, the whole proposal of the consortium needs the approval of the National Company Law Tribunal.
Okay.
Which is the NCLT. Yes. But what's happening in the courts, and as you've seen in many other court cases in India, this is getting stretched. Now, various reasons are there. Some employees have contested it. A bank has contested the resolution plan.
Okay.
And then the NCLT itself has asked the government and the DGCA about the slots that Jet Airways used to have in Indian airports, and these were distributed to other airlines. So there are many, many layers to it, and that has meant that this has got stretched. And we are nowhere close to the NCLT giving the final approval.
Right.
So which means that probably the revival of Jet Airways has been pushed back by at least by a quarter, 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
90 days is what everyone is saying. So so we may now, instead of summer, I think down the owners would be looking at a launch during the festival season, which is around October. October, November, I think, would be the ideal time for them.
Mm-hmm.
And also because of COVID and things like that, I think their plans have also been tweaked. They want to start off with cargo operations and then get into the passenger segment. So a lot of things happening in the jet. I think the crucial thing is that the Jalan Kalwar Capital Consortium has reiterated that it is still interested, continues to be interested in Jet Airways.
Mm-hmm.
But the only hope is that the courts finish off the judicial process the earliest and take a decision, and then one can go ahead in the process.
Right. But you mentioned that, you know, the plan for them is to start the cargo first. Would that mm-hmm. mean that it would come before the September-October time that you mentioned?
It's possible, because it doesn't take much to start cargo. You know,
okay.
It's a much less complicated operation to start than a passenger segment, because passenger segment you need to start bookings, and you need a booking window of at least 10, 15, 20 days for a good enough bookings to happen. But cargo, you can straight away start operating. You just need to ensure that the aircraft is in good condition, and you can start getting cargo and you can start flying. And there is demand for cargo now, because especially because of the vaccine. And not just in India, we've seen SpiceJet looking at overseas cargo operations to, you know, take vaccines out of India to other places in the world. And I think Jet Airways also would like to have a pie in that. It has got around, it's got a few aircraft at its disposal with it, and it can immediately start using them once it gets the clearance. So, and that would be a good way to start generating cash, because aviation, as you know, you could need keep generating cash. That's very important.
Mm-hmm.
And that will also take care of some of the expenses to restart the passenger segment. So, it's a rational move. And the only thing, like we mentioned before, the critical thing is how fast the NCLT approves it.
Right. Prince, coming to the last story, the government has received multiple preliminary bids for the sale of Pawan's Hans, which is the helicopter service company.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk more about this and give us a background on it?
So Pawan's Hans is one of the companies that the government has identified for its divestment program. And among the other aviation business, we know Air India is already there, and Air India, we already have crossed the stage where contenders have put in their EOIs, and though very little has been heard since then, what we believe is that the EOIs are being looked into, and the government will be shortlisting bidders, but we don't know when that's going to happen. With Pawan Hans, so like you said, it has an operation of helicopters.
Right.
It mainly does provide service to ONGC.
Mm-hmm.
And ONGC also has a substantial stake in the company. I think it's about 49%, and the government directly owns 51%.
51%, yeah.
Yeah. So, and also Pawan Hans is active in the Northeast. So it will be interesting to see which companies have put in bids, because would there be any Indian airline that is there, or would be an investor, who would it be? because in ONGC you already have a customer which will keep using the fleet. So it's an interesting company to look at. So yes, so the government has said that they have received multiple EOIs. Now the only thing is everything has been kept very secretive, just like in Air India. So one would have ideally like some communication at important timelines to come, but then we'll have to wait for the government announcement for the next set of information.
Right. Thank you so much, Prince, for all these details.
Welcome, Chitma.
With that, it's a wrap on this episode of the Corporate Buzz podcast. If you have any other queries or suggestions for us, please do write to us at mcpodcast@nw18.com. For more news and updates, stay logged on to Money Control. Thank you for listening.